Part 20, Chapter 9. The little boy lay on the blood-stained ground, his head back and in the direction of the lower slope. Johnny had been certain he was dead. Nobody could take that many submachine gun slugs in the middle of his body, and a small body, and live. He felt awful. He knelt beside the torn boy. He was going to pick the body up, and he put his hand under the head and lifted it slightly. There was a light flutter of breath. Biddy's eyes trembled open. They were glazed in shock, but they saw Johnny, knew him. Biddy was moving his lips, a very faint whisper of a voice. Johnny bent closer to hear.
I wasn't a very good squire, was I? Sir Johnny.
Then tears began to roll sideways from the boy's eyes. Johnny reacted, incredulous. The child thought he had failed.
What?
Johnny tried to get it out, tried to speak. He couldn't make his voice work. He was trying to tell Biddy, no, 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 Biddy. You are a great squire. You have just saved my life. But he couldn't speak. The shock was wearing off in the boy. The numbness that had held back the pain vanished. Biddy's hand, which had risen to clutch Johnny's wrist, suddenly clenched bruisingly in a spasm of agony. The body did a wrenching twist. Biddy's head fell to the side. He was dead. No heartbeat. No breath. No pulse. Johnny sat there for a long time, crying. He hadn't been able to speak, to tell Biddy how wrong he was. He was not a bad squire, not Biddy. Never. After a while, Johnny picked the boy up in his arms and went down the hill. He laid the body very gently on the seat of the ground car. He went back and picked up the dead body of the Russian and carried it to the car and put it in. Windsplitter had seen him from a distance and came up, and the other horses, over their fright now, approached. Johnny put the dead boy on his lap and drove very slowly toward the academy. The horses, seeing him go at that pace, followed. The little cortege crossed the plain. It took them a long time to make the trip. Johnny stopped at last beside the trench where the 67 cadets had fought the last battle so very long ago. He just sat there, holding Biddy's body. A cadet sentry had seen them approach. In a little while, cadets started to come out of the buildings. Word spread further, and more came. The schoolmaster, from an upper window, saw the crowd gathering around the ground car and went out. Dunaldine and Angus and Kerr came up to the fringe of the crowd. Johnny got out, holding the dead boy. He wanted to talk to them, and he couldn't speak. Several truckloads of Russians suddenly roared up to a halt, and they spilled out, joining the crowd. Several cadets raced back to the armory and came out with assault rifles and shoulder bags of magazines and began to pass them around to men who were looking in the direction of the compound. An angry mutter was rising higher and higher among them. Several cadets raced back to their rooms to get personal sidearms and came back, buckling on belts and loading magazines. The thunder in the mountains reverberated now and then across the plain, and an angry, cold wind whipped around the mob. A truckload of Russians who had swung over by the compound arrived back and stopped in a geyser of dust. The Russians were shouting and pointing toward the compound, trying to say what was over there now. No one could understand them. A small ground car raced up from the direction of Denver. spraying clods of dirt as it screeched to a stop. The pilot officer in charge of drones jumped out, a stream of drone printout pictures crackling in the wind as he forced his way into the crowd, trying to tell them it had all come through on a drone overfly, trying to show people what had happened. He had ripped the printouts and the discs out of the machines and come at once. A coordinator was finally able to make himself heard. He had gotten now what the single Russian truck had seen at the compound.
The Regentis are all dead over there! The whole commando! Is that Cyclo Turl still alive over there?
Somebody shouted. There was an angry roar from the crowd. Several surged forward to see whether Turl was visible in the pictures.
He's still alive!
Shouted the Russian's coordinator, who had gotten the information from the truck. The crowd surged, and some started to climb into the Russian trucks. The Russians had been drawn up in a line by a Russian officer, and they were checking their rifles on command. Colonel Ivan, who had come to stand near Johnny, was gazing, stricken with guilt, at the face of the dead boy.
The Cyclone dies!
Johnny had finally gotten a grip on himself. Still holding the boy, he climbed to the top of the ground car. He looked down at them, and they quieted to hear him.
No. No. You must not do anything now. In the star systems of the universe around us, there's a far greater danger than Brigantes. We are fighting a dangerous battle, a bigger battle. We have made a mistake, and it has resulted in the death of this innocent boy. I killed his murderer. We cannot undo the mistake, but we must go on. In that trench there, 67 cadets died, fighting the last battle of the Cyclo invasion over 1,000 years ago. When I first saw that trench, it gave me my first hope. It was not that they lost. It was that they fought at all, against hopeless odds. They did not die in vain. We are here! We are fighting again! You and your fellow pilots control the skies of Earth! I will make a request of one or another of you in times to come. Will you honor those requests?
There was a masked stare. Did he think they would not? Then there was a concerted roar of assent. It took minutes for it to quiet. Johnny said,
I am leaving you now. I am taking this boy to Scotland to be buried by his own people.
Johnny got down off the car. The pilot whose ore carrier had been readied for the Russians was pointing it out to the Russian coordinator. They loaded Johnny's horses. They found Stormalong's kit in the ground car and put it aboard. The Russians took over the body of Dmitry Tumlov to take it home. Johnny climbed to the cockpit of the big ore carrier, still holding Biddy. Before he closed the door, he looked down at the crowd and said, slowly and clearly,
It is not the time for revenge.
And then he added a bitter, grim,
Yet!
The crowd nodded. They understood. Later, it would be an entirely different matter. The huge plane rose and turned in the gray, storm-discolored sky. It dwindled and was gone.